Welcome to Inside Out, the Louvre-clad podcast where we explore how Australia's most distinctive facades are inspired, engineered and implemented. If you've ever wondered how ambitious designs make the leap from concept to construction, you're in the right place. In every episode, we'll take you behind the scenes of complex projects, delve into challenges and meet the designers, makers and visionaries who turn bold ideas into iconic facades. So hi, Marina. I'm so glad to have you here as my first guest on the Louvre-clad podcast. When we first met, of course, you were at John McCaslin. Now you have your own business just about to be launched. That's exciting.
Hi, Dava. So nice to see you again. I loved our work on Wattle Station. I'm so happy to be your first guest and help you launch the Inside Out podcast with Louvre-clad here. Thank you so much for inviting me. Yes, Renew Design is my personal design platform and a space where I share ideas and inspiration and my approach to architecture and interiors. It is also where I explore my own design philosophy and connect with wider creative community. At the moment, I'm also working at the architecture firm here in Sydney, but Rena is my personal space where I'll continue to grow alongside my career.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your personal journey into architecture? You know, how did you find yourself on projects of this scale?
It's a very interesting question. Thank you, Dava, for asking. It kind of all happened organically. I was always fascinated by how spaces shape people's experiences. And over the years, I've been drawn to projects that balance design, storytelling with technical aspects. Collaboration, I guess, has been central to my growth as an architect. So I was naturally gravitating to the projects that have this level of complexity, I guess. And I guess just organically, I kind of fell into the right places, you know, meeting the right people. It wasn't by design, I'd say. It was lucky kind of coincidences that kind of brought me there.
And did you have any key mentors in your earlier projects that really stand out in your career that come to mind?
Yeah, one of the biggest influences on my sort of design sensibility and what really has shaped my design vision in my early career was my time studying in Amsterdam. The Dutch approach to design has really shaped how I think about architecture these days, and that a strong idea can be as powerful, you know, if not more powerful than a complex idea. That was really interesting to me because I've always thought of architecture as something quite complex, and like you have to layer different types of information, you know, and different types of storytelling. And yet at the same time, I've discovered with the help of one of my mentors, who is the US-based landscape architect, Rosetta Sarah Elkin, and she actually came and taught in my school in Amsterdam for a semester. And she just had such a significant influence on me because she really had shown that the simple idea can be a good enough or could be a great idea in the end. So like less is more, you know. So that was actually quite pivotal to me and just really helped me to clarify my design thinking. And the other mentor who I'm very grateful to have had studied under him is Peter Corrigan. He was my mentor for a year at the RMIT University in Melbourne. He had passed away now, but he had such significant influence because the way he taught architecture, the way he was always pushing you outside of your comfort zone, was always telling you that you should, as an architect, you shouldn't be afraid to redraw or redo. And that's kind of interesting because sometimes as an architect, you think like your first original idea is the best, but in reality, you know, you're forced to redesign, forced to redraw, add other compliances, or client wants something else, the government wants something else, and all of a sudden you end up in this pickle as an architect, right? Like, what do you do? So it's actually interesting, you having to go back to the drawing board over and over again, but actually what it does, it enriches your design and it makes it even better, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But having that confidence to do that, I guess that's amazing that you had a mentor like that. That, yeah, I definitely had some of those mentors that really stick out as well like that. But so you were in Amsterdam studying there and then you ended up in Melbourne. How did that happen?
I'm originally from Europe, but I always was fascinated by sort of finding this balance between technical and design aspects within architecture. As I was studying architecture, I had this opportunity to come to Melbourne for an exchange program to RMIT. It had really fascinated me, facilities that they have, the teachers that they have, and I felt like this perfect mix of design and technology. It kind of made me want to explore even more what does Melbourne has to offer, because they saw they design is just so unique.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's very experimental, I'd say, right? Very postmodernist, experimental. You can't find it really anywhere else in the world. And then kind of happened organically again with help of some really amazing people who did help me to transition and finish my master's degree at RMIT. And here I am. Now I'm in Sydney for the past 8 years, 9 years now.
And Australia is your home.
Yeah, and Australia is my home, yeah.
I hear you talking about how architecture is kind of this layering of the technical and the design and all these different aspects. I think Waterloo Station was a really good example of this in lots of ways. And I especially love this concept of the past is the earth and the future is in the sky. Can you unpack a little bit about how this guided the design or how this concept came about in the first place?
It is true. It is a simple yet very powerful concept that came about from the consultation with the Aboriginal community, and especially was contributed by Yira Binjing, who served as an Indigenous advisor to the team. This design philosophy that the past is in the earth and the future is in the sky shaped so much of the design thinking. For me, it was about ensuring that the facade systems weren't just an afterthought, but a part of all this narrative, you know, weaving into this concept as well. And the louvers, for example, not merely a performance element, but also have contributed to, you know, to the architecture's expressions of the facades. That was important to have this elements of weaving of those design elements, you know, and
almost like the history as well, and the history of the place. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I think I've read a little bit about that. And
exactly. All this like weaves into what the station represents, like architecturally, and bringing this Indigenous industrial and social histories into this coherent language, which is also feels like it belongs to the place, you know, just creating this like journey through time and heritage, starting from the deep Asian stories of the land and moving up to towards the present. That sort of progression from the archaeological memory through the ecological context to community and future makes Waterloo more than just a transit hub, I believe. It just becomes this like lived story shaped in the station, right? It's shaped in brick, in light, in art. Yeah, I think it captures narrative of Gadigal people as well, this gesture of cultural respect and recognition. It just, I think it's very fitting, and there was a lot of design thinking to try to integrate all of these parts, you know, onto the design. And I think it done it very successfully, you know.
Yeah, so it must have been quite a balancing act with all of that storytelling and then integrating all of the technical functional requirements, etc. Yeah, so with all of these narratives, like how do you really balance the storytelling with all the technical and functional requirements of a station like this?
Oh, this is a very good question. It's definitely not an easy job. And I feel like the real design challenge comes into this trying to integrate that, like those technical requirements into such a large architectural narrative and yet still, as an architect, you know, stay committed, I guess, right, to the design story, that the narrative that you're telling. In the example of the Waterloo Station, being at a metro station, there were so many strict technical and compliance requirements, metro requirements, Sydney trains requirements, that it really was shaping every decision. So as an architect, you're trying to constantly hold all of these requirements in mind, like fire rating, ventilation, accessibility, you know, and so forth, and constantly asking how does this still tell the story of the place, you know? So you kind of have to constantly be mindful of how does it actually end up in architect, like unique and important, I guess, architectural expression, or what would I say? I guess like still keeping that design narrative intact.
Really holding on to that design narrative.
Yeah, exactly. So
through all of that. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think one of the biggest challenges on this project was actually working on the south box of the station. As you know, there's a lot of louvers there. a lot of ventilation and, you know, fire protected areas. And it was definitely a big challenge to resolve, you know, that part of the station. So what pretty much was happening while we were working on this, I guess it's like a two little buildings you have, right? Like you have South Box and you have the Northern Box and where the people enter the station. And the South Box had to go through so many design irritations, constantly redesigning, rethinking, and trying to make sure that it actually still fits into the all of the, you know, technical mechanical requirements, because there were so many and they were quite difficult to achieve, I guess. It wasn't just the mechanical, there were some operational requirements, you know. I guess for me, I guess facades are just never just a technical barrier. It's like a cultural touch points which communicate the history, the vision, the human experience, you know. So through the integration of these performance systems early, you know, in the design and kind of integrating them as we're working through the design, that really helped. And I think that really created the architecture that speaks to people. And they wouldn't even notice what is actually happening behind
all
those layers of facade.
Yeah, well, it's so interesting because, I mean, as we know, I mean, for those that are listening, as the design consultant at Louverclad, I worked with Marina and Daniela from WSP for many hours and with our mechanical engineer as well, going through all of the louvers and making sure that they met the mechanical, the pressure drop requirements and the rain resistance requirements to really make sure that you get the right louvers that are going to meet the performance of the project. It was quite an interesting one because all of the louvers actually sat behind the cladding in a lot of ways, which was great because we got to actually select the louvers based on performance more than what they looked like some of the times. However, they still did need to meet those kind of vertical openings, etc. But yeah, how did you find that collaboration process? How important do you think that is to the project's overall success, initiating that kind of collaboration at early design stage?
I think it's super important. And I'm so grateful that Louverclad had such an amazing team and was really supporting us along this process. I was very impressed how many hours you guys dedicated to helping us. It was truly is a difficult process, you know, because behind the doors of our meetings, our conversations, it's me and Danielle trying to, you know, work it out. And then me and John Holland having to, you know, then go through all those review of all those louvers and trying to bring that, I guess, that intel, that knowledge that came out of our meetings, of our conversations back to them so they understand the importance of a particular louver that you have selected, you know, helped us to select.
Yeah.
That was meeting those requirements. That was such a interesting process. But it was incredibly rewarding, to be fair. I was pretty pleased to find out, you know, that they actually did appoint you guys for the project. And I was incredibly happy because just the amount of time we've all invested, WSP, us, John Holland, into making sure it does meet all the technical, all the architectural and, you know, fire requirements. That was that was not an easy task. Yeah. And also, like, you know, selecting the louvers and making sure they can be concealed, they can be, you know, be integrated into the aesthetic and the storytelling of the station's facade. That was, you know, kind of very the outcome that only could have come out of a genuine this cross team collaboration that we had, where each discipline brings their expertise, you know, to the table InDesign just becomes stronger. So I think that really is the key here.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I haven't really talked about that much like in this questions, but I was just thinking, you know, because we selected all of the louvers down to the actual pascal of pressure drop, and every louver was selected based on the exact rain resistance that was required for every louvered area across the two different boxes. I mean, that building should be performing at optimum performance for a good amount of time, I'd say. So I think that's...
100,
that's
wasn't it 100 years?
100 years. Is
100 years, design life. Yeah.
So, yeah. And I'm certain that it will perform for that amount of time.
And beyond.
Which is great, yeah. So, yeah, such a great example of that.
I'll get a Danielle as a follow-up.
Yeah, I haven't
calculations here.
Yeah. So during this time of collaboration and seeing you every other day, sometimes looking a little tired. I know there were lots of challenges, as there are on projects like this. And is there any particular, you know, breakthroughs or, you know, key challenges that really stand out for you on the project that you can remember?
Yeah, definitely. The project was happening during COVID, right? We were all in the situations where we had to work from home or had a possibility to come, you know, into an office if there was like one or two people there and the certain measures were in place in line with the government restrictions. There were so many interesting moments on a project and challenging, right? And yet looking back at it now, almost 4 years later, I think one of the biggest stories like sort of stands out in my mind is being a package lead on a job. It's especially of this scale, you know, it's such a large cross disciplinary team involved and so many like moving parts, you know, and the client sits next to you, John Holland, you know. Mm-hmm. So I guess during the time there was a lot of redesign involved in facades because of certain budget constraints, and perhaps there were way more technical requirements and visual, I guess, as well, aesthetic requirements that were not accounted for at the beginning. So we were going through rounds and rounds of redesign. And one night I just went home, I guess, from the office. So I was at dinner. At 10 p.m., I get a call from my director, Panos Panadeus, who's London-based, but he was here for the station for, I think, about 2 years. I'm not exactly sure, but he was a great help, you know, and really was my support on this project. So one night, I just get a call from him, and he's asking me to completely redraw and reissue the entire facade package.
By the next morning?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right.
He says, okay, we have until 8 a.m. So, I mean, I don't know. I was kind of like, I mean, you're so tired at this stage, so it doesn't really matter if you sleep or not. So you may as well just go and draw.
Keep going.
Yeah. So got a couple of Red Bulls, some lollies, and yeah. So and then you just sit and redraw. And
wow,
he was a great help. You know,
he
had stayed with me up with me all night from his hotel room. I was working from home. As I was drawing, he was reviewing.
Wow.
Then he would go doze off for a couple of hours, 4 in the morning, back again.
And you got it done.
And I got it done. I mean, I couldn't get through the entire package because a team of about 6 people was working on it. Mm. And it's a little bit ambitious, I guess, to think that I can do it all by myself in a matter of 6 hours.
Yeah.
But it definitely helped us to get it over the line with the client. And as exhausting as it was also very memorable to me. And now I look at it with a smile.
Yeah, you know? That's good.
Now I can laugh about it.
Do you want to do one of these projects again?
Let's come back to it later.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Was there any like biggest learn from that, all of that, like that you can take away?
I guess I've never worked with anyone who had my back in such a way. I've never said it to him. But Panos, thank you so much for having my back on this project. I definitely couldn't have done it, you know, without him, without such a tremendous support and just being so solid in his thinking. I may have not appreciated at the time. He didn't have an easy role being in his position. But I really felt like in such a high pressure moments, like having to go back and redraw overnight and then reissue in the morning, it really helped me to shape sort of the vision of what kind of leader I want to be, you know, for the people I'm working with and making sure that I have their back. I think it's so rare, I think, these days that you see a support and a leader like that. It was really like an eye-opening to me. I've never sort of had that kind of experience before, you know, someone really, so really supporting you. Yeah.
It's exactly. Nice when you connect with those amazing leaders like that, just so supportive. Do you think expectations are changing for building exteriors around performance systems and how they're integrated into buildings?
I think so, definitely. I think, there's definitely a lot stricter sustainability and compliance regulations in place. There's definitely the strong push, you know, for sustainability component, you know, going on right now. And I think those are not, this should be like your baseline, you know, they should be non-negotiable. They should be part of every project, not just those large infrastructure projects where the government is, you know, behind all of this. And they're definitely making sure that all of this compliance elements are in place, you know, and they
meet the performance that's required.
Like sustainability, you know, the life cycle, all of these things. I think it should be really like applied to all the projects, you know, in architecture. And it's sad to see that it's not the case, you know. That's why I think it's so rewarding to work on a project like this, where you get to see how many important aspects are implemented into such a project. And yeah, even though those like performance systems like louvers, for example, right, or other mechanical systems, or they're not often visible, but, you know, they're hiding behind the architecture. And a lot of the times, I guess, they can be pushed to the very end, you know, to try to kind of fit in to what the architecture is sort of doing. I think if you leave those kind of to the afterthought, you know, you don't get such a, you know, an outcome.
Yeah. Do you think that NCC and it's slowly changing to maybe make people think more about that on other types of buildings and as slowly? Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's definitely been a lot of more initiatives in architecture. Like passive house becomes like a big thing, and people really thinking about sustainability and passive aspects of design, which can be expensive to.
But they can also be quite simple, can't they?
Yeah. I mean, it could be expensive at the beginning, but if you look at it the long term and the life of the project, you know, then it's definitely worth it, you know.
Can you think of any detail on the project? Is there any particular detail that stands out for you that perhaps other people wouldn't see that is quite memorable for you on the facade or any little detail on the project?
Well, it's actually a funny story. It's funny you ask. I was actually thinking about this. What could that be? Because there's so many hidden elements in this project. If you assess it from like, I guess, facade, external point of view, I guess one of the sort of elements that stands out to me the most isn't very glamorous, it's just the awnings of the station. On the surface, if you've seen some pictures, it looks super simple. It looks like a flat awning, beautiful bronze color, like a corten sort of color. And it looks like the simplest thing that could be. In reality, we spent, again, hours and hours redesigning and trying to make sure that it can actually drain the water. And where is the water going to go? And how can we still make them look quite sleek and thin? That was quite actually a challenge.
So it's an aluminium cladding?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
To be made to look like corten.
Yeah, it is a corten. Yeah, it's a corten color. So, exactly.
Ah, right. Yeah, that is always, it's actually a lot more challenging than you think, isn't it? Working out where the water goes following that little drainage.
Yeah, exactly. The issue is also like having people from London on the project.
And they think a lot more about that, don't they?
I think you would think so, but not really. Because not really. They thought it's there's no rain in Australia.
No
rain in Australia. Yeah. And then they came here and it was raining for like 1.5 years nonstop. It was actually quite interesting because they were saying like, well, in London it does rain, but it does not rain like Sydney, you know? And obviously we can see like for the past couple of years, especially in winter, it's been raining so much. So all that water has to go somewhere. And, you know, working with the great team from WSP, the hydraulics engineer, it was a big challenge to ensure that all the potential, you know, 100-year storm situation, you know, can actually be drained. So that's what you usually account for. You calculate for the maximum possible rain, you know, in a 100-year storm event, which will never happen, to be realistic. It's like, apparently it's like 1 in 1,000 possibility, 1,000 years, I think it happens. That's what...
But it's designed for that anyway
now. But it's designed for it. Yeah, exactly. So that was definitely not something people would notice and not something they would think, you know, to kind of when they're looking at that design element. But it's unforgettable to me because it's just a reminder how something simple looking actually takes the most effort.
Yeah.
You know, in architecture.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think there's any other kind of materials or methods or systems that may be misunderstood or underused in architecture?
Definitely think like adaptive systems such as louvers, you know, shading devices or dynamic facades are still underused. They often thought as purely technical, I'd say, but they can be expressive too. And, you know, shaping light, shadow, the atmosphere in a powerful ways. There is also a lot of untapped potential, I think, in rethinking standard materials, you know, and like concrete or glass, and asking how they can perform in a better ways rather than defaulting them to business as usual. I definitely think there's a lot of explorations yet to be done in that area.
Because you've actually designed a brick, haven't you?
Oh, thank you so much for bringing this up. I did, yes, indeed. It's been a few years now. The brick was designed while I was in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. And while I was already living here, I actually applied to exhibit it at the Dutch Design Week, as it is designed in Holland and meeting all of the requirements. So it was exhibited at Dutch Design Week 2014, and it was called Brick in Pattern. And the idea of it was... exactly that. It's like rethinking your standard brick, you know? What else can I do? And it was a lot of inspiration from the Brazilian way of stacking bricks.
Okay.
So they have this like interlocking concept. But also the idea was to kind of just rethink. It was literally like an exploration, rethinking your generic, something that you see every day, everywhere, you know, and thinking from an, I guess, different perspective. How else can you, what else can you, how can it go around the corner? And it's very interesting. So the brick can actually be turned, kind of flipped inside out and used in both ways, and it's completely different shape, you know, creates completely different shape. And I think those kind of explorations are very important, you know, especially for architects, designers, you know, because I think they create, you know, something unique. And they can create something innovative, you know?
A brand new little Lego block to create with. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so just like that brick, I mean, I guess as speaking from Louverclad, we have such a variety of components that we hope can always be used to create such innovative projects like this one. So just to recap, how do you see, you know, I think... from what we've spoken about, early engagement is almost a non-negotiable, isn't it?
Definitely. I think early engagement definitely saves time, money, you know, avoids redesigns, produces a lot more stronger and creative outcomes. And the Waterloo experience really showed me that cross-disciplinary team isn't just a good practice, but it's actually a future of how we will deliver such complex projects or the projects of certain level of complexity.
If you worked on one of these large public projects again, is there something you'd love to see realized in a project like this?
I think my dream would be to see more public projects where the facade isn't just a shell. It's more like a living canvas, something that embodies sustainability, that tells the story of the place, that inspires people who interact with it every day. I'd love to be part of a project where the design acts most like a civic gesture, both technically brilliant, you know, and deeply human, you know, bringing this humanity aspect to the architecture That would be really nice.
Well, it sounds like you've just got a wealth of experience to share with the architectural world. From what I hear from you, I think it's been so nice to learn about your journey a little bit more. Any piece of advice that you would give to other young architects just starting out?
Well, I'm not that old.
Exactly. You're not.
I think I think the mindset shift is the most important thing. As an architect, I think a lot of the times from the early days, you know, we kind of thought of, or traditionally they were kind of doing everything, right? But the world changes and all of these pieces of architecture kind of being pulled in separate disciplines. And I think for architects, it's very important to remember that collaboration can actually bring much better creative design outcomes, not to create a compromise or not to create a restraint to the design. So I would say, as an architect, as a young architect, don't underestimate collaboration. I believe some of the best design moves that I've seen come from actually conversations with engineers, suppliers, or even community stakeholders. Approach to collaboration, I believe, is a creative partnership and not a compromise.
Absolutely. I'm definitely a big advocate of that. Yeah, facilitating that collaboration because, from my experience, some of the best projects come when we all, get on that same page, just like this one. Finally, at Louverclad, we believe in creating facades that inspire the world. So on that, we love to end with the inspiring three: project, person, and place or practice that really inspires you.
Rongshan Chapel by Le Corbusier. That would be the one.
Have you been there?
Yes.
Wow. I need to go there. Okay. Is there one person that inspires you or has given you, really stuck out as the person that's inspired you on your journey in architecture?
Definitely Peter Corrigan. Be willing to sketch, test and throw things away. The design always gets stronger through iteration.
And lastly, is there one place that you go maybe to find balance or a practice that you use every day to really stay balanced within this kind of stressful environment when you work on larger projects like this?
Honestly, so this energy healing is a big part of it for me. Recharges me and gives me perspective, on things.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that always keeps me grounded is meditation and the morning coffee with my husband really brings me, using that grounding place.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Marina.
Thank you, Dava. That was so wonderful to see you again and to speak to you. I'm really thankful for you inviting me.
Thank you for joining me. Thank you for being my first guest. Look forward to collaborating again soon.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
If Marina's approach resonates with you, you can always connect with her through renadesign.com or her Instagram, renadesign-studio. And of course, we'll have all these links in the show notes. So that's it for episode one of Inside Out. Huge thanks to Marina Evangelista for joining us. And if you're designing for performance, remember, early collaboration isn't just helpful, it's foundational. If you enjoyed this episode, please stay tuned for part two, where we learn about the project from a mechanical engineering perspective. For more insights and resources, please head to louverclad.com. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to hit follow. Please join us next time.